Welcome to Man at Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministries. Our goal is to assist you in ridding yourself of all of your debt, from credit card debt to card and student loans, the mortgage, paying back Uncle Joe. You can learn more how we can help you by going to CompassCatholic.org. My name is Steve Holbrook, and joining me today are the co-founders of Compass Catholic Ministries, John and Evelyn Bean. Last week, we began a four-week series that gives you an overview, a deep dive into our nine-week small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. I'm sure you've heard that term, Navigating Your Finances God's Way, a number of times, because we mention it at least once every show. Well, last week, we took you through weeks 1 through 3. And if you missed the show, we have it available on our website, CompassCatholic.org. Scroll down and click on podcast. Well, today, John and Evelyn will take you on a tour of weeks 4 and 5. And John, the two main themes of week 4 are honesty and seeking godly counsel.
Even though you may not realize it, each one of us makes many small decisions every day about being honest. Every day we're faced with situations that tempt us to be dishonest, like getting too much change from the cashier and not saying anything about it.
How about padding your expense account or your timesheet at work?
Uh-oh. Maybe turning in more time on your time card than you actually worked?
How about fudging the numbers on your tax return so you get more money back?
I'll bet you that's the biggest one,
at least
out of our group. Our group of lists, not our group of people.
Oh, I was wondering.
Okay.
That was kind of an odd statement.
Yeah. How about bringing supplies home from the office so you don't have to buy office supplies for your home?
That's just a very small way that everyone's faced with regular decisions regarding honesty every day. And too many times in our society, honesty is a relative thing.
We have people saying things like, well, I don't quite remember about that, or as I recall. So many times people use terms that indicate that they are being totally honest, but they're not being absolutely truthful.
So what do you say to the individual who can justify in their mind why they do these, why it's okay?
I would ask them what God would say if they were face-to-face with God.
Now, what's he have to do with this? Yeah. That's my answer.
A lot of people don't understand that, but deep down inside, I think each of us longs for the truth, and being dishonest disrupts our personal relationships with other people. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, I think you're right. But give us an example, Evelyn, of something that might happen around the house.
You mean my favorite example of being totally honest without being absolutely truthful?
Yes.
Okay, so little Johnny, I'm going to use your name. We can use little Steve if you want to.
Hey. I'm playing with Stevie.
Little Johnny and little Stevie are playing in the ball playing in the house with their ball. And Johnny's bouncing the ball around, having a good time, and all of a sudden the ball hits a lamp and knocks it over. And the lamp falls to the floor and is smashed into a million pieces. Well, the first thing that happens after that is Mom runs into the room to make sure everybody's alive and says, did you break the lamp? And Johnny replies, no, Mommy, because in his small mind, he's being honest because he didn't break the lamp. The ball broke the lamp.
I think that's a great excuse.
But if he were being absolutely truthful, he would know that he was the cause of the ball breaking the lamp because he was playing with the ball.
You're right. It's just so easy to fudge the truth. And that seems to be a practice of so many celebrities in our society today.
And politicians.
Yeah.
And they never admit it until they get caught. So it's not that, it's not that proactive need to be truthful or honest. It's that reactive need to try to say that I was honest when, in fact, I was lying through my teeth.
There's a great verse from Judges. In chapter 17, it says, every man did what was right in his own eyes. Society tells us that we should take care of ourselves first and look out for number one. Bad way to do it.
So what do you think the difference is between society's version of honesty and what the Bible teaches? Steve, this is kind of what you were asking about before when you asked the question about honesty, because I do think there's two different standards in the world. I think there's true living Christians who are living their faith and people that are living according to what our society teaches us.
No, I mean, we run into individuals that can justify why they cheat on their taxes.
Oh, yeah, it's just the government.
Exactly. Or they take enough of my money. I deserve this.
I deserve it. Yeah, I deserve is a big one for being dishonest. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or it's just the insurance company. No. You know, nobody's getting hurt.
Or the people who take the papers so they can feed their computer at home.
Yep.
I do so much extra work for them, and I don't even get paid for it.
Well, and the bottom line is it's not the government that's getting hurt. It's all the individual taxpayers. It's not the business that's getting hurt. It's the individual employees.
Yeah, it's that domino effect.
Stockholders. Yeah. So we're not really ever hurting a business or a government. We're always hurting the individuals that make up that organization.
Or the individuals that have to pay for their insurance costs mm-hmm. that continually go up, up, up.
There you go.
Because everybody's taking paper home.
But that's just a real indication that society thinks that honesty is relative and you can fudge the truth to get whatever it is that you want and you can protect yourself by lying.
The Bible says that we are supposed to be honest with everything. Always. The eighth commandment is you shall not lie. Pretty simple. Four words.
And I think that's the biggest difference because God is concerned about us being honest. And I think a lot of people in society don't even think there's a God, so that question's irrelevant to them.
The Bible demands honesty. Proverbs 12:22 says, lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. How are we supposed to make decisions about being honest?
You know, that's a good question because everything in society tells us that we only need to deal with the facts that can be seen. So if nobody saw me do it, nobody knows about it, I don't need to be honest because I can act in any way I want to.
Yet the Bible tells us to act in a way that displays our faith in the living God. In John 4:16, Jesus tells us, I am the truth. We need to follow him and also to be truthful.
You know, I think when most people in that split second where they make the decision about whether or not to be truthful or tell a lie, in that split second, I think they're trying to figure out if they're going to get caught or if they can get away with it. I think that goes through people's minds. Like, well, if I take this extra money from the cashier, is she going to realize it before I get out the door and chase me down, or can I actually walk out the door and go home with the extra money?
But you know, Evelyn, if we're living from a scriptural basis, then our decisions are based on what will please God. And guess what?
That won't please God.
Well, he sees it all. He knows. If you're fudging the truth, God will know that.
You know, and I think that gets back to what we were talking about before. It's so easy to think it's just the government or the insurance company or a business. And those are such large institutions that we're not harming anyone if we're lying or cheating. But it's always the individuals that make up those large institutions that get harmed. It's the policyholders, the business owners, the employees, and the taxpayers who are harmed by our dishonesty.
And dishonesty always harms an individual. Anytime we are dishonest, we are harming one of God's children. So we're talking about Chapter 4 of Navigating Your Finances God's Way, and we're talking about honesty. Evelyn, what are we supposed to do if we've been dishonest?
Well, what we should do, first of all, is a thorough examination of conscience to find areas of our life where we may be dealing from a dishonest standpoint. And then, as with any other time we've sinned, as Catholics, we should seek out the sacrament of reconciliation and put ourselves right with God. And after we restore our relationship with God, we should restore our relationship with the person we've harmed.
So, Evelyn, tell us about restitution.
I knew you were going to bring that up. Well, Steve, you know what I did one time? I ripped off a Bible from an old parish that we belong to.
On purpose?
No, but I opened up the Bible in our Navigating Your Finances God's Way class. Uh-huh. And the front of the Bible said, Property of St. Francis, Raleigh, North Carolina.
And you don't recall taking it home?
No, I think our son brought it home and we just brought it with us when we moved to Florida.
blame it on her son. That's a smart move.
So we sent them a nice check with a little note about the fact that we were studying honesty, and we
really
needed to pay them for the Bible we had inadvertently brought to Florida with us.
You know, our actions speak louder than words. And if we profess to be good Christians and good Catholics, people will see us as being dishonest. It really changes their perception of our faith. You can't be dishonest and love God.
So the next thing we talk about in the Navigating Your Finances God's Way Week 4 Bible study is seeking godly counsel. And I know you have a good Bible verse for us, John.
Where there is no guidance, the people fall. But in abundance of counselors, there is victory. Proverbs 11:14.
You know, I don't think most of us go out of our way to seek counsel, especially when it comes to financial matters.
Well, so many people think that seeking counsel is showing weakness, and it's not really.
I think one of the most important things you can do to avoid financial problems is to seek counsel. You know, if we surround ourselves with godly people who can counsel us, we're probably going to make better decisions.
Well, but that's providing that we ask the question seeking counsel in a totally honest way, and don't shade the way you ask the question based on the answer you want to receive.
Good point. That's being dishonest, isn't it? Sounds familiar. You know, we all have limited experience and knowledge, and we benefit from the insights and suggestions of others to make a proper decision.
So what about spouses or parents? Where are they supposed to get counsel from?
Well, Mr. Bean, your spouse is your number one counselor. Because if your finances are joined, if you're married, you're both going to suffer the consequences of any bad decision. So it's important for both of you to agree on the course of action.
And if you don't agree on the same course of action, then you need to wait and pray and keep talking about it. Nothing is going to ruin your marriage faster than making really bad, one-sided decisions.
You know, how many people have we seen over the years, John, that have lost a lot of money or subjected themselves and their families to years of heartache and stress by making bad financial or one-sided decisions?
And what's really tragic is they could have avoided almost all of their difficulties if they had simply sought counsel from somebody with a solid understanding of God's way of handling money. And, you know, by taking this Bible study, you're going to get to know 9 or 10 other individuals who know and understand God's way. They're going to be able in the future to provide you with great sources of counsel.
This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministries. And today, we are taking you through our 9-week small group Bible study called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. John and Evelyn Bean are your financial guides. And if you would like to view the topics that are discussed in weeks 4 and 5, go to compasscatholic.org, click on Books and Study, select Navigating Your Finances God's Way, and then Participants. And not only can you preview weeks 4 and 5, but you can take a look at all 9 weeks and the topics that are discussed. And if you like what you're hearing, you like what you see on the website, and you think this would be great for me or this would be great for us, simply fill out a contact form, and we'll get back in touch with you shortly. So, Evelyn, let's move forward in week number 5, and the second part of week 5 is all about generosity.
Giving is a great place, Steve, to challenge our honesty. You know, earlier we were talking about honesty, and when we're thinking about giving, we need to ask ourselves if we're really being generous as a faith response or if we're treating our giving as just one more bill to pay.
There are few areas of a Catholic life that can be more misunderstood than giving. For years, we just gave a minimum, and our hearts really weren't in it, Evelyn. But then we learned what the Bible said about being good stewards. Basically, our hearts were changed.
You know, the question I love is, when we teach in the Navigating Your Finances God's Way Bible study, is the question about generosity is not, how much of my money do I want to give to God? The real question regarding generosity is, how much of God's money do I need to keep?
And most people, they just don't have this attitude. They act as if all the money and their possession belongs to them. And their giving is done because it's expected, not because it's a love response to a gracious and good God.
You know, one of the things, in my opinion, that frustrates many people as far as giving is that there's an endless stream of needs. I mean, it seems like if you give to one charity, you start getting appeals from 10 different charities. And, you know, we have the weekly offering for the church. There's special collections. There are ministries to the poor. There's campus ministries. There's secular charities. We have friends and work colleagues who are involved in various charitable efforts. And it just seems like we're constantly getting hit for donations from all these different sources.
You know, I agree with you. But there's one thing that I think that I would really like to emphasize here. And that's the weekly offertory to the church. You know, the church is there Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. And whether we're there or not, the church still has bills. They still have to maintain the facility. They pay the light bill. They pay the water bill, you know, all that kind of stuff. It doesn't matter whether you're there or not. And they need that ongoing weekly contribution. If you're only making it once a month or once a quarter, that's okay. But you still need to think of your church first and foremost before you go to any of the other charities that you might want to be involved in.
So if you're only able to contribute once a month, you would take your weekly offering and just conglomerate it into that once a month giving. If you do a lot of traveling, you're out of town a lot.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yes.
The list for giving just goes on, and it's easy to feel overwhelmed. We think it's important to talk about the four elements of giving in order not to feel overwhelmed. And those four elements are attitude, advantages, amount, and approach. So, John, why don't you start us off by talking about attitude?
The four A's.
The four A's.
There you go. Attitude. You know, we find a lot of verses in the Bible that tell us that the attitude is the most important thing that you can have. It has to be an attitude of love in giving. For example, 1 Corinthians 13:3 says, if I give away everything I own to the poor, but I don't have love, I gain nothing. So we need to set the example of giving from love. God did that when he gave us his only son. We have to have that same attitude of love. So many times when we give, we think we're giving to the parish or a ministry or, you know, some program or a needy person. But when we give to God out of a feeling of love, then our giving becomes an act of worship.
In 2 Corinthians 9:7, it tells us that God loves a cheerful giver. Now, I don't know about your parish, but nobody in my parish looks really cheerful when the collection basket comes around.
You mean nobody's laughing?
Nobody's laughing. Are you laughing when the collection basket comes around?
No, but when you said that, I had this image of somebody sitting in the pew going, yo, over here.
Most people try to not touch it. Have you noticed that?
Actually, that's what I was going to say. That was my next thing. It's actually, no, not here. I gave, you know, last year.
If I don't touch it, they won't expect me to put anything in it.
But that is a good point. You really, I mean, the expression on individuals' faces are very somber. Like,
yes.
I hate parting with this.
It's like, I don't want to give this.
Yeah, never thought about that.
Or it's like they're shocked. You mean you started taking up a collection?
But giving to God should make us deliriously happy. If God is the author of all life and everything in the entire universe, then it's our privilege to return to him some of the blessings that he has first given to us. So, the next time you're at Mass and you put your envelope in the basket, do it with a smile on your face and a sense of joy that you can participate in giving back to God.
A joy in your heart.
There you go.
Years ago, before Audrey and I went through navigating your finances, we were one of those. Don't send that thing down my pew.
Yeah.
But now, but when you start hearing about God owns everything, and all you're doing is, for me, you're thanking him for everything he's given you. He's provided for your talent that you have, the treasures that you have, the time.
And you can't outgive God.
No.
The more generous you are to him, the more generous he is to you. Now, that doesn't mean if you give generously to your church, you're going to get financial gain. but it comes in the form of blessings and joy and the ability to share and recognizing God. The advantage of giving is that we do the work God has called us to do. The church continues its ministry. Hungry people are fed. The naked are clothed. The missionaries are sent.
However, the biggest advantage when we give is to ourselves. In Acts 20:35, it says, keep in mind the words of the Lord Jesus who himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And the more that we have, the more that we can give. And that's a huge thing. You know, we're called on to give according to our capabilities, not according to a number. You know, when you start talking about giving, and people immediately think about a tithe, a 10%, then it becomes a maximum. Oh, I've got to tithe. I've got to give 10%. In reality, you are giving according to your capability. And for most people, let's be truly honest here, most people can give way more than 10%.
So that was about the amount to give, which was the third bullet point, right? U.S. bishops wrote in a pastoral letter on stewardship that we don't have to give anything. As a good steward, we should be asking, how much do I want to give? It's like you said, John, giving should come from the heart, and we shouldn't be obligated to some minimum amount. We should be thinking of the maximum amount, which is much more challenging.
Yeah, that heart feeling comes out of Matthew chapter 6. For where your treasure is, there also your heart will be. And it goes back again. I hate to keep referring to the parable of the rich young man, but he has so many different things that apply to his attitude. You know, his heart wasn't in giving. His heart was in the possessions that he had. It wasn't focused on God. And think about yourself. When I think about the way I was before we took the Navigating Your Finances God's Way class, I was focused on me. I was focused on money. I wasn't focused on God. That was an issue. I had to get over that issue.
Because both the Old and New Testaments tell us that we should give in proportion to the material blessings we receive. And that's not only our money, but it's also the friends we have, the marriage we have, the children we have. There's all kinds of material blessings that don't really focus on money.
So that leads us to the fourth element of giving, the fourth A, which is the approach. During Paul's third missionary journey, one of the priorities was to take up a collection for the suffering believers in Jerusalem. In 1 Corinthians 16:2, he wrote, every Sunday, each of you must put aside some money in proportion to what you have earned, and save it up so that there will be no need to collect money when I come. We draw several practical applications from his instructions concerning this collection.
Okay, so we started out by saying every Sunday. So giving should be periodic. It's to be done on a regular basis. And like you said earlier, John, one of the most obvious places that we need to support is our parish, and we need to give during the offertory at Mass. We honor God and give him thanks when we participate in the Mass through the physical act of putting our gift in the offertory.
And giving should be personal. Each of you, it is the responsibility of every child of God, whether young or old, rich or poor, to give. Also, having our children see us put the envelope in the basket is a good opportunity to begin to teach them about giving.
You know, that verse also says put aside and save, so giving should be out of a private deposit. So you need to be prepared to give. You don't want to be one of those people that sees the basket coming down the row at Mass and you're surprised by it. Prepare to give. Give it out of a private planned deposit.
And don't just, you know, throw in the spare change that you've got in your purse or your pocket. It's planned, okay? And it should be a priority. That's the fourth P of the four P's. You must, is what Paul told the Corinthians. Giving must be our priority, and giving should be the first item on our budget, not something that we consider as an afterthought. That habit helps us to put Christ first in all that we do, and it defeats the temptation to spend what we decided to give.
So giving to the church should certainly be a priority. We're part of the church in our local parish, and we should always support the church through our weekly offering. But we should also be giving to the poor. Because of all the missions of the church, this is easy to do. We can give to Catholic Charities or St. Vincent de Paul or to some other Catholic organization that supports the poor.
There's a lot of Catholic ministries that are worthy of support. You know, a lot of the parishes will already support some of these. So in our diocese and in most dioceses, there's a Catholic foundation that supports the work of the church. And there are also specific opportunities to give, such as a seminary or other programs that the diocese might be running.
And then there's other organizations, such as secular charities or schools or fraternal organizations that fight various diseases. And our attitude is that everyone can contribute to a secular charity, but only Catholics contribute to Catholic charities. So we really restrict our giving to secular charities and focus on giving to Catholic causes.
So what, where, and when you give should be decided between you and your spouse in prayer. It's really between you and God.
There are weeks 4 and 5 of our 9-week small group Bible study, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. As I noted earlier, we are doing a 4-week series on our study. Last podcast, John and Evelyn took you through weeks 1 and 3. And if you'd like to share that one, and or this one, simply go to compasscatholic.org, scroll down to podcast, and not only will you find the 2 podcasts that we just conducted, but you'll find an archive of all the podcasts that we've done over the last year. We are very grateful that you're listening, and any feedback that you have would be greatly appreciated. Simply send your thoughts to ask@compasscatholic.org. And remember that we are posting a new podcast each and every Wednesday morning. Our next podcast will take you through weeks 6 and 7. What does the Bible tell us about work, saving, and investing? This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministries.